the root of where money came from. The Chinese had printed money over 2,200 years ago, and the reason they had printed money is so it was easy for their tax collectors to collect their tax. They couldn't carry around pounds, you know, 100 pounds, 200 pounds of gold. So they created paper money to have the ability to collect taxes more efficiently. That's the original reason paper money came about. It wasn't designed to create wealth out of nothing. And so where we are today, this revaluing the dinar and the payment of the settlements and the prosperity packages is to put a whole new currency out on the street to level the playing field for everyone. And so if you have a legitimate business and you have a legitimate bank account and you can prove where your money came from, the money you have in the bank right now, when this is over, will just convert over to the new treasury dollar. There won't be anything more difficult than that. But if you have money overseas and you can't prove the origins of it, then that money is worthless. In order to make this all happen, we have to go through the process that you're seeing unfold right now.
So we've heard things about the Amero. You know, is there any validity to that? Of course, you've already touched on the new U.S. Treasury bills versus the old Federal Reserve bills, but is there any validity to the Amero?
Well, yeah, the Amero was concocted by the Bush-Clinton cabal, and it was basically to perpetuate the system we already had in place. But the trick to the Amero was we're running huge deficits. Okay, the peso and the Canadian dollar are much stronger currencies than the U.S. dollar, and I can almost guarantee you there isn't a Canadian in the world that wants to jump on board and finance the American debt. Likewise for the Mexicans. So this was a way of diluting our debt across two other countries.
Go ahead.
No, I just said that wouldn't fly. That's the reason the Amero came out. People heard about it, but it's not going to be a reality.
So when this thing is all said and done, again, because it's so hard to fathom for people, and I know even sometimes it's hard for me to wrap my head around it. So you have you suddenly have all the debts are paid. So, and then not only that, but is there really enough to go around, or are they just going to, you know, basically do a do-over, a reboot? You know, how are all these debts going to be paid? Are all these debts going to be paid? Is it just the United States? Is it the United States that has basically been screwing everybody over in, you know, these global settlements? Is it just with them? Is there any sort of clarity that you can give us, some color on that?
We go back to the first comment I made about that, is our dollar is created out of debt. So that's a negative value. And so when we're having a new currency, a treasury dollar, that's actually got a positive value based on gold and silver, they would essentially cancel themselves out mathematically. The problem is if we have to reconcile things from, like, let's say we convert tomorrow, if we have to reconcile previous debts based in a negative and we're reconciling them to a positive, that's mathematically impossible. So the only solution is to zero them out. But the majority of the debt we're carrying are collateralized debt obligations. And here's the trick to this thing. Most of the big banks that are upside down, that are struggling, they are carrying tons and tons of CDOs, collateralized debt obligations, and the same across the world. Bernanke, under pressure about 3 weeks ago, admitted the CDOs were worthless. So effectively, he's already admitted that all the debts are gone. Now, the CDOs are based on the mortgages that were packaged in this mortgage kiting scheme that you look at as the mortgage debacle. Right now, any mortgage that was written since about 2003 is probably worthless, because in order to sell these CDOs, they had to pull off the promissory note so that the investors overseas could not see if these notes were performing or non-performing. And that would be based on the amount of money they would pay for that mortgage-backed portfolio they would buy as an investment vehicle. Now, what's happened, the scheme was this. A spinoff of Delmarva, which was a CIA front operation, was a company that still exists and still in its operation in Pinellas, Florida, called Nationwide Trust Services. And Nationwide has people down there. Some of them can't even speak English, but they're listed as a vice president for documents for Wells Fargo, or a vice president so-and-so for Bank of America. Anyway, they got all these people at the Nationwide Trust Services there in Pinellas, Florida, that have never been to a Bank of America office, never been to a Wells Fargo, never been to a Deutsche Bank office, and they're signing these documents, rolling these mortgages over. And this is a spinoff into MERS. Some of you have heard about MERS. And all of this is fraudulent. So when this money is reissued, the new currency, they cannot prove at this point that there is a mortgage obligation because there's no promissory notes, because they destroyed them in the process, so they couldn't prove, they didn't have any way to prove that the mortgages were performing or non-performing. They did this to deceive the investors. Now it's turned around and bit them in the butt, because now if you can't prove that there's a promissory note attached to that mortgage, by rule of law, your house is free and clear. Now, if this becomes known publicly to the entire country, and it's already been proven in a Massachusetts case, it's already been proven in an Ohio case, you don't have the promissory note, you don't have the backing of a mortgage, therefore your house is free and clear. So that's another avenue by which debts are going to be forgiven. Because when this is all over, the CDOs have been forgiven bank to bank, and the things that are undermining or underlying those CDO values are the mortgages. And the mortgages have no promissory notes. So essentially, everybody is debt-free.
Now, so are you saying that individually, the way that they've been doing this, as far as the mortgages that people, I mean, of course, we all know about the mortgage bubble burst here in the past couple years, and believe me, I was selling mortgages myself through a company. So you're saying that for the most part that a lot of these mortgage debts that people have are going to basically be gone, or, you know, this is kind of making a lot to swallow.
Yep, they're going to be gone. Because you can walk in any court of law and say, hey, Mr. Bank of America, show me the promissory note. And if they can't show a promissory note, there's no mortgage. And if there's no mortgage, you own the house free and clear.
Okay.
We have rules for transfer of property value in this country, and you have to prove that. Now, I want to interject something. MERS has also played a game. Because of our archaic ways of recording property, they found a little loophole, and I'm going to warn everybody about this. When you go out, after this is all over, and the money is refunded or revalued, and the new currency is out there, I want to warn you about something that the bad guys are going to do. A lot of people, when I have a group of people that I talk to, and I had advised them, you know, when this is all done, go out and buy hard assets, or income-producing real estate, gold, silver, those kinds of things, but mainly things that are hard assets that produce cash flow. But the caveat to this is very simple. MERS has been running around the country and placing liens on property that there's no way to prove that the lien was not valid or not. So they tie you up in court and they foreclose before you even know it, and they're basically stealing your property because of a hole in our way of tracking real estate. So what I'm going to suggest to everyone listening is when you buy a piece of real estate and you are in escrow, you go and you get yourself a private real estate attorney. And you have that real estate attorney go to the courthouse and get a certified copy of the deed for that property. So it shows the liens on that property. And you get that in your hot little hand certified by the courthouse. And while you're in escrow, you have those lien holders satisfied out of escrow. And you have them submit you a letter that their lien on the property is satisfied. Now, if MERS comes along later and says, well, we were subject to that property on this other lien or whatever, and they say they're putting a lien on your property, you can. It's a rule of estoppel. You stop them right there, because our courts in this country cannot commit fraud. And so if they give you a certified copy of the trust or the deed of the property, and it's got the only lien holders there, nobody can come along later and say that the title company was defrauded or the title insurance company defrauded. No, they can say that. They can get away with that. But nowhere in our rule of law do courts commit fraud. So if you got a certified title from the courthouse, it stops people like MERS from putting a lien on property after it's free and clear. Now, they've done this on four occasions that I know of, and they've gotten away with it because people couldn't prove that there wasn't a lien. They didn't have the wherewithal. They didn't understand how this game was being played. So when this is all over and you buy real estate, while you're in escrow, you go get your own real estate lawyer, and you have them pull a certified copy of title from the courthouse. And that way, if anybody ever claims after the fact to have a lien on property, you can stop them right there saying, I got a certified copy from the courthouse and you have no claim. And they have no way of fighting you on that because our courts do not commit fraud.
Now, a lot of people who are listening to this call are dinar holders for the IQD. You know, one of the screwiest things that we can never seem to put our finger on, and I know that you're not a professional in this, and you may not even know the answer to this question, but you seem to have quite a bit of knowledge in a lot of areas. But everybody's worried about the tax implications, or probably better said is that we don't know what the tax implications are going to be in cashing out this currency or basically swapping one currency for another. Have you heard anything? Have you talked to anybody? Have you talked to a professional? Do you have any, I guess you'd say, advice on, I know, going and getting a tax attorney or a professional of that nature to handle these affairs, but I know many times that we've even contacted the IRS themselves, and we've gotten five or six different answers, you know, from them. So they don't even truly know.
Yeah, well, the IRS will confuse a lot. There are three avenues of thought, and you have to be patient with the timing on this, and there's a couple of reasons here. You want to be slow to cash out the dinar, and here's a couple of reasons. And first, I want to put up front that I'm not a financial advisor, but just looking to the situation here, to be cautious is to be slow in cashing these out, and here's the reasons why. If you take it as just a straight capital gain, if you go cash them out right up front, most likely you're going to get hit with a 35% tax capital gains. If you wait a year and a day, you're probably going to get long-term capital gains of about 15%. Now, that's assuming the IRS is still in place. But with the new currency and the government being debt-free and the people being debt-free, I don't think my guess is I don't believe the IRS is going to be in the same game any longer, and they may not even come into play. So those are the three schools of thought you should consider. And some people have talked about a base rate. I don't know. I'll tell you a little story about that, and if there's any IRS agents listening, I'm past the statute of limitations. So I'll take you back to 1973 for a moment. When the U.S. went off the gold standard in 1971, they started floating the U.S. dollar against the Deutschmark. And they did this so that Boeing and a lot of other people could sell a lot of heavy equipment to the Germans. Where I was right there in Nuremberg, right there on the base, was an American Express bank that had the contract from the Department of Defense to provide banking for the GIs on there. The interesting thing about the American Express is if I took American dollars, which I got my pay as a soldier, and I went into American Express and converted them to Deutschmark, I would get a 3.5% discount on my Deutschmark. And then if I walked off the base three blocks down the street and went to Bundesbank, I would get a 4% a 3.5% to 4% discount on dollars. So I would take $1,500 and I would go get Deutschmark, and I would walk downtown. I'd take that and I'd go buy dollars, and I'd come back with about $1,600. And then I go back and I get more Deutschmark, and then I would come back and I have about $1,800. And I could do this 3 or 4 times a day. So I don't want to go into how much I made, but I made a lot of money doing that over a course of about, maybe a month, month and a half. And so we had a, I don't know if he was a real IRS agent or just somebody for the Army that would advise soldiers on how to fill out their taxes. When I explained this to him, he said, I don't know how you would base that because you're exchanging currencies. I don't know what your base would be, what your base value would be on that. So this guy just said, I don't know what you would report, so I guess it's not income. Now, that's changed a lot. So I kind of walked in 1973 and made a lot of money just by exchanging currency. That might be what happens this time, and I'm saying might be, but I would exercise a great amount of caution as this thing goes forward and assume at the beginning you're going to pay a short-term capital gain of 35% based on the net value you cash out for against what you actually paid for the dinar. And that's right. The safest way you can do it.
Right. Yeah, and most of us are, we're not trying to get one over on the IRS. We've always instructed people to do the right thing, and we do about the 35% to 15% depending on when you purchased it and how long that you, of course, have had that. The next question that really pops up for me, and again, it's something that people, again, just it's hard for them to wrap their heads around, is that, we're saying that there's going to be a new currency, which means that the Federal Reserve is going to be non-existent, which means the IRS is pretty much going to gradually fade away into the sunset. We hear things where there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be tried for possible treason to, and not just here in the United States, but, around the world for, supporting this entire crazy mechanism of what the central bank has been doing and so forth. But how can you actually, because I remember when a gentleman brought this to me, I'm sitting there thinking, like, how are they going to suddenly get rid of, throw the people into prison, get rid of the federal government, blah, 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 so forth and so on. How are they going to pull this all off? I mean, there's got to be a huge game plan put in this. How are you going to do this without disrupting the people? I mean, it's hard enough for people to fathom, who killed JFK, let alone, all the craziness that could possibly come out of all the dirty secrets or any number of things. How do you keep all that wrapped up? How do you go forward and change something so drastic that we've been so used to for so long and suddenly switch gears and go into something else without everybody finding out about it, without the, the United States having, I know that you're going to have all these debts and so forth, but I guess what I'm trying to say is how can we all be able to wrap our heads and think logically about this for a moment? And if there's no way possible, I totally understand, but there's got to be a plan put in place.
Well, sure there is, and I have to take you back to Dachau. We're going to have our march through the Dachau concentration camp, but it's going to be the whole country. And one example that I know firsthand was the March 2003 bombardment of Baghdad. While everyone was watching the shock and awe, we were dumping 12,840 cruise missiles on Baghdad. And these were not the neat ones you see on TV that go through the window or down the chimney. These were first generation cruise missiles that weren't exactly that good. Defense intelligence analysts estimate that 80% of those missiles did not hit their targets. And they went into shopping centers, and they went into schools and mosques and residential areas. I actually did see the satellite BDA photos of thousands of Iraqi innocent civilians who were killed that day while everybody else was watching our troops with Tommy Franks running up the highway there to Baghdad. On that day, we killed over 220,000 Iraqi civilians and maimed another 610,000. And the websites have been blocked here, but I think if you go to Doctors Without Borders, there may still be some photographs of 2 and 3 year old Iraqi children with no arms and legs. And I'm not talking about some missing some legs, some missing. I'm talking missing all 4 appendages. And that's a war crime, and we did that. And so that's our Dachau moment. Then you have Dick Cheney openly says on television, yeah, he authorized torture, a violation of the Geneva and Hague Conventions. He openly says it, and it's like, so what? Well, by his own admission, he's a war criminal. So we're going to see these things come out. There will be tribunals, and the tribunals will either be done by us or they'll be administered by an international tribunal made up of, you know, probably a composite of whoever the 140 nations decide they want to send. But there will be a day of reckoning. That much I guarantee you. And the American people are going to choke on this because they're going to have their Dachau moment. They're going to get marched through the concentration camp, and they're going to see all the things that have been done that they thought were funny. You know, I remember if we go back to when Carter was president, and we had the issue with our hostages in Tehran, and people were running around, you know, nuke the Iranians, nuke the Iranians, nuke the Iranians, and we were all supporting the Shah and all this stuff. Well, people never looked really hard at the Shah. This was a guy that was so despicable that he murdered his own father to become an American puppet to take over Iran. Now, think about that. Who among you would kill your own father for money? Now, that's the kind of people that our government, who claims to be a democratic and freedom-loving nation, supports. These are the realities of history you have to look at. These are things you can check. These are things you can Google. These are things you can do your own research on. And they've been in front of you all of your life.
So, now we mentioned about China before, how they basically were the ones that were pushing all of this. As far as they are basically, I guess, with all the debt and all the things that have happened, China basically has their thumb to be able to push the people, I guess you'd say the dark side of the force, out and force them to basically give up their power to allow, you know, things to get back to some equality, you know, an equal playing field and so forth. But at the same time, you also have other countries. It's not just China. And I just want you to kind of elaborate a little bit more on that because, you know, people are going to see, well, China's taken over all these banks. They're coming into America. They want to take over this. You know, what's going on with the banking system? How can they shut these, you know, these banks down, you know, because they're not certified, whatever, so forth and so on. So if you can give any sort of, you know, color on that would be great.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's give a little perspective. You know, first, right now, out of the Mideast, out of the 10 tankers, oil tankers that leave the Mideast, one will go west to the United States, and 9 will go east to China. China is importing a huge amount of oil, and it is in their best interest to stabilize the Mideast and to get rid of the OPEC cabal created by Bush and Rockefeller. And they level the playing field not just for themselves, but for the entire world. And we have to keep this in perspective of why they're doing this. These people in China, the elders, the people that are behind the scenes that are the kingmakers, these people are not their politicians. These people are not in the Communist Party. They use the communist concept to unify China into a very strong nation. Right now, China has a much higher literacy rate than children in the United States do. Right now, China has the most, the fastest high-speed rail in the world. They're building infrastructure at an alarming rate. We have economists in this country that mock China when they say they're increasing their GDP by 9 to 13% a year, and we go, you can't possibly do that. That's impossible. Well, I want you to imagine the infrastructure that the United States had in 1905, and imagine if that was the infrastructure we have at this moment, and we had three times our population, and we were going to build out that infrastructure today based on what we had in 1905. That would be a huge, huge undertaking. And, of course, our GDP would explode at 9 to 13%, maybe 15% a year. And so that's what the Chinese are doing. They're not looking to expand. They're looking to enhance what they already have. And so to do that, they have to pull in an enormous amount of resources from Brazil and South America and from Southeast Asia and from India and from Europe and the Mideast and from Africa. And they are very, very pragmatic. They give to get. They understand that there has to be a symbiotic relationship. And we don't understand that. We don't believe in a game of where there's two winners. There's a winner and a loser in our thinking. In the Chinese thinking, there's a winner and a winner. That gives them long-term sustainability. We don't think in that terms. And so that is our downfall of understanding what they're doing. Now, I'm not saying they're altruistic. I'm saying they're very pragmatic. And they're pragmatic in this way. They are very powerful, and they're gaining more power each day by focusing on making their lives better. The Chinese elders do not want their grandchildren or their grandchildren's children to live under the threat of a nuclear holocaust. So in order to take that away for the betterment of the entire civilization, they've learned how to economically get what they want without firing a shot. You know, and the Western civilization really struggles with understanding this, really has a problem with this, because we don't think that way. We want it now. Immediate gratification isn't fast enough. The Chinese will take their time, and they will build out what they have to build out to get to where they want to go. And if it takes them 5 years or 50 years, they're going to do it methodical for a better way of life later. We want it right now. And that's the difference in the philosophy. So when they're dealing with other countries, they're going to be very pragmatic. They don't need the military. Let me tell you a little story that very few people understand. They saw it but didn't know what happened. The Chinese, like a bunch of boneheads, we parked two nuclear carriers off the coast of China. Now, everybody's heard about the three-mile limit, and most people don't understand where the three-mile limit came from, or the 12-mile limit, or 200-mile limit, okay? Internationally, the three-mile limit was established centuries ago because that's as far as a cannon could shoot. That was a cannon shot 3 miles offshore, so that was the international limit. Then when airplanes came along, we created economic zones, and those went out to, I think, 50 or 100 miles. And now that we have more powerful weapons, the United States unilaterally created what was called an exclusive economic zone, which is essentially a 200-mile limit around us. Now, we get all upset when somebody goes into our exclusive economic zone, which is basically our international line. But when other countries exercise that exclusive economic zone, we don't acknowledge that. So what we did a few months back is we parked two nuclear carriers inside of China's exclusive economic zone. And they politely asked us to leave, and we would not leave. So while they are thinking they've got China over the barrel, one of China's submarines quietly pulled up 35 miles south of San Diego and fired an imp weapon at the USS Ronald Reagan, and it exploded behind the Reagan. Now, the Reagan is hardened. The imp weapon is not going to affect it. But it fried all the electrical equipment on the Princess cruise boat that had to be towed into San Diego, for those of you who remember that. And basically what they were telling the Americans is, we could have taken your aircraft carrier out anytime we wanted. So if you want to play this game with us, we'll play it with you. And that Chinese submarine sat right at the mouth of San Diego Harbor, and nobody knew he was there. So that got people's attention. They didn't hurt anybody, but they made their presence known. Now, the American public won't know that, and the only reason I know it is because of what I did for 30 years. So the American people have no clue that the Chinese basically told the Americans to back off, quit putting nuclear carriers in our backyard. So if they wanted to hurt us, that was the perfect opportunity for them to do it. They're not like that. They don't want a war. They want a level playing field that we can all get along with. Everybody plays, everybody gets along. We don't have to have weapons. We don't have to have war.